This is the 23rd of March, 1980, Taos, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning.
We would like to begin with a topic that's brought to our attention, that being, would you explain why it is, I'm assuming that it is true, that many, if not most, enlightened ones are not bound to families and lots of family obligations?
Well, first of all, I think we have to make a distinction quickly between an avatar, a great master, a great teacher, and the many people on the earth plane who have the opportunity to reach freedom, or at least as much freedom as is necessary in order to no longer return to this particular level of awareness. And there is a difference. I have said before that it is not necessary for you to complete the course here on the earth plane. By that I simply mean that when your vibrational awareness and frequency is such that you have a certain amount of power within, a certain amount of awareness is born and realized within you, then you are not required to return to the earth plane to battle against a great deal of opposition in the forms of energy fields and areas of confusion. So, by and large, the reason you don't see these great ones walking around in ordinary garb and so forth is simply because they have gone on to other levels of consciousness and no longer need this experience. But then, there comes into the earth plane occasionally the great one who, for one reason or another, and often it's because of obligations to disciples, feels the need to return to a body form for one more lifetime, one more round of attempting to awaken those under whose wings the disciples are hovering. Now, it is at this stage that we come into the differences between the family and the obligations and the single person. And I cannot deny the fact that most of those great ones, even if they were married in such a unique relationship as to almost not be married. By that I simply mean that there are no obligations on either side of the relationship. Both parties are perfectly aware that the freedom from the illusion, enlightenment so-called, is the primary and only object of that incarnative life. And therefore, everything else stands secondary, everything, meaning even so much as the welfare of the children and the food provided and the so-called necessities of life. All of these things take on a totally different hue. And everything is seen in the light of secondary interest. Now, I don't have to tell you that it's a rare person who gets to that level of awareness, and it's even rarer that there would be two that come together in order to find this possible. Therefore, it is said without qualification that most times when an avatar chooses to return, he or she, as the case will be in the future, will return as single persons because there is the intensity necessary and also the lack of having anyone of similar capabilities who would be able to leave that person free from any kind of other obligation, and they could get about their father's business and get it over with. This brings up a subject which I think some of you will really need to hear. Whether you will wish to hear it or not is something else again, and that is this. The reason that family ties can provide such a tremendous holding, that's not quite the words that I should use, the reason that a family situation can be an obstacle to your freedom rather than a help to your freedom is not anything inherent within the state of matrimony or family life or any such thing. What is the case is, it is extremely rare for two persons to both have, with equal intensity, the desire to simplify their life to such an extent that freedom is at maximum. And therefore, instead of aiding each other, you end up by pulling against each other, and therefore you both lose in the last. I think this is something that has to be seen and critically looked at. One's ego gets in the way so often and does not want the other party to be free to go toward his or her own freedom. One throws up flags such as, well, what about the family? What about the obligations? What about all of your commitments? And because the person is probably wavering anyway, because it is very difficult to turn your back on such things with true vehemence and throw yourself into the life of finding realization, they will succumb to these flags and they will say, yes, 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 I will postpone it, I will postpone it, at which time there is never another day. Understand that waiting until you're in your 50s, 60s, and 70s is not going to be any help, because it is when you are younger that you begin to really formulate the power to bring with you, to bring toward you the power necessary. So by the time you're in your 30s, and certainly in your 30s, you should be able to now at least begin to see the necessity. Those of you who are listening to this tapes, you know, if you're in your 20s, don't assume that, well, I can just go on with everything and when I'm 50, I'll pick it up again. You might be dead. You have no way of knowing. All of you make this very erroneous assumption that you're going to live on the earth plane until such time as you need to die. Well, perhaps, perhaps not. I think this is a great waste of time, and you really do not help each other. And I would like to explain how this goes into the making. I've said before that, seen from a higher point of view, the human entity seems to sit within a bubble. And that bubble is their own making. It is a part of them that you would call the mind. And it is that which separates things from each other. Now you sit encased within this bubble that you have created very carefully, which is a mind construction. And everything that you see, you must see through the gridwork of this mind construction. Now, since thoughts are invisible, you think that thoughts are not powerful. You feel that if you cannot see something concretely, then it is not terribly important. Actually, the opposite is much more true, that those things which you do not see have the most possibility of being a detriment to you simply because you do not take them seriously. If all of your thought forms could take form bold and strong within your living rooms, then you would pay attention. But because that is not the way you want it, because you do not wish to end the game but rather wish to prolong the game, you have made it so that your thought forms are not seeable by the normal human eye, and therefore what you don't see can't be very important. As you sit there within the bubble that you have constructed, you have certain projections that you send out of yourself, and it, instead of truly seeing that which lies beyond your bubble, you only see that which your mind has projected out. For example, a woman comes or a man comes into your view. Depending on your own mental construction, you will decide whether that person is beautiful or kind or interesting or whatever it is. It is a mental process for you. Someone sitting quite next to you will have the opposite response. Now, why is this? We've said before, it's nothing inherent in the person. It is simply something that is inherent within the vision of the person looking. All right. Now, this happens in relationships. Let's say that a man and a woman are living a life together. And now, in one household, we have to have two worlds, the world of the man and the world of the woman. And to say that these two worlds are going to be harmonious in all ways is absolutely foolish. It is not possible, do you understand what I'm saying? It is not possible for one household to hold two completely opposite worlds, because make no mistake of this, my friends, your worlds are opposite. You do not see things the same way. People do not. And people make up these grand excuses and say, well, it's because you're sitting in chair A and the other person is sitting in chair B. That isn't the reason. You could both be sitting somehow magically on the same spot of the chair, and you would still see things differently because you have built up within your own being this bubble of grid work, of mentalization of how one sees things. It is, to me, amazing that people have not tumbled long before this to the fact that two humans, having populated two different worlds, will not always have trouble to some extent in pushing two worlds into one structure. And then you compound the problem by having children. All right, now why does this compound it? Because with every child or every adult you add to your household, you're putting another world in there. And you say, but that's the challenge, to be able to get all those to work, worlds to work in a harmonious oneness. And I say, yes, it is perfectly possible for you to orchestrate some kind of false harmony. And by that I mean, you set up certain rules. And if everybody follows the rules that are set up, then yes, you can move through these different worlds without bumping into each other too much. Yes, I agree. But in order to do this, everyone involved in this experiment cannot be who they are. They cannot be spontaneous, because if person A is spontaneous about something and this somehow jars against person B, because it does not mesh with person B's concept of the world, person B is going to respond, and probably negatively. Now, if A and B are both adults and C, D, and E are children, C, D, and E are never going to be able to be spontaneous within their own world. Why is it that children so long to leave home? Because they feel that their realities, their worlds, are not given the same interest and appropriateness and rightness that the parents' worlds do. You see? Now, in most cases, one person's worldview dominates. It's either the man or the woman, depending on the strength of the person. But this is why you have in this world this necessity to have somebody in charge. Why is it necessary? People say, well, it's important because at moments of crises, somebody's will has to be dominant, otherwise nothing will ever get done. Well, that is not the case, but that is the easiest answer. The reason that it has to be that way is that since worlds bump into each other on so many points, somebody has to dominate so the ground rules can be led. Very strictly put down on paper, almost in black and white, so everybody understands who is allowed to do what and when and why and how often and with what amount of the necessities of life and the monies and so on. Everything has to be all organized. Why? Because worlds are constantly bumping into each other. And be that as it may, that may help you to harmoniously get through a life together, but it does not lend to freedom. Now let me explain why. One of the primary responsibilities that you have in searching for your freedom is to look within your being and see the mental constructions that you have made. Now, if you happen to be the one in charge of the household, you will be able to look at those more readily because, after all, yours are the ones that are being followed. But let us say that it isn't. Let us say that you are not in primary position. You are in a secondary or even ancillary position within the family structure. This is a very fearful thing then, my friend, to start looking at your own mental construct. Why? Because there is going to come upon you the realization that you are living according to the rules that someone else has laid down, and you are going to start to resent it. And this is where, when someone says that one member of the marriage team begins to awaken, there is that part of them that begins to rebel. And the first thing that they rebel against is, why is it always your world instead of mine? Why is it always your world? Well, now, if someone is extremely intelligent and extremely good at this, what they will do is they will set it up so that both parties have some say. But even then, my friends, there comes that time where the person says, I want to be free to do what I want to do. I don't mean that I want to do crazy things. I don't want to do harmful things. But I just want to be able to wake up and say, this day, I want to do what I wish to do, and not feel the necessity for guilt hanging over me for not being able to do it. I want to be able to just claim the right of doing what I want to do and not have to make excuses all the way around to every member of the household in order to do what it is that I wish to do. You see? Now, what is the solution? The solution, as far as I can see, is if there are two people who are very dedicated to freedom and who view this carefully and realize that two worldviews are conflicting and one is now stronger than the other, then the fair thing to do is to, as far as possible, allow the other parties, whether it be one or two or three, however many existing, to begin slowly to have their way of living their own life, if possible. But even that, no matter how understanding you are of each other, the fact remains, until you, one or both of you, transcend your worldview, you will continually run into each other. It is just the way of things. And this is why it is said that as long as you stay in the mind, you will not be free. Because that worldview is only mental. There's nothing other than mentalization within that. And once you leap out of that mind construct into the freedom of the vastness, then it doesn't matter to you what your little life is about. It doesn't matter to you if you don't get your way or if things are not precisely as you would wish. It simply is no longer an issue because so much of your awareness is in its expanded state rather than its limited state. Do you understand me? And this is what happens with those that are free. And then they are accused of not caring. They are accused of being uninvolved. And so, in a sense, it is true. They are uninvolved in the sense that they don't fight for their rights. They don't battle against other people. They allow people to do this or to do that. In fact, you can have then the situation of the husband or the wife whose mate wishes to have an affair, and the other one says, fine, if that is what you need, go on and do it. And truly mean that. I mean, not with any kind of constriction and fear, but yes, I see that that's needful. Go and do it. And not have this feeling of loss, of being violated, of being... Because all that happens in these cases, any of these cases, is that one worldview, one view of things says these kinds of things cannot happen, and another view in the same house says these kinds of things should happen, and somebody is bound to be frustrated, somebody is bound to have difficulty. And these are the problems I bring up because these are the problems that are most often brought to my attention. The vast majority of people who come to me for private sessions want to know about illness and want to know about how best to get out of a marriage situation, to enter into another situation and keep the marriage going somehow, you know, all of these things. These are the primary questions. How to deal with feelings of attraction toward other people that somehow violate the rules of the marriage that they have set up. So I'm simply bringing out those that are most obvious. I think that there are other problems that should be addressed that people rarely bring up. And one of the primary ones is your responsibility to accommodating the worldview of your children. I think that parents are very uncaring about this. And they have this sad, sad feeling that their worldview is somehow right. Do you understand the trouble here? Mm-hmm. And they validate all of their controlling mechanisms over their offspring by this hanging on this one illusory thread, which is that their worldview is better than the worldview of the children. Now, this is often not the case. And oftentimes children rebel, not because of any deep-seated need to rebel. You know, all of your books say that children in certain years, I guess it's the middle years, what are they called?
In adolescence
and so forth, that somehow it is a required course that an adolescent rebel against the structure. My friend, a child has been rebelling against the worldview of their parents ever since they awoke to the fact that there are two worldviews at stake here. What they have come into contact with early on is that they're powerless to have their worldview paramount. Therefore, they accept for a period of time the other person's point of view. This does not mean at any time that they accept it or approve of it. It simply means that they have contracted with themselves to go along with it in order to receive in exchange the necessities of their life, so that someday they can grow up to the extent where they can leave home. It is not surprising that children leave home, and I think it's amazing they don't leave home sooner, because we are talking about a very difficult problem, which is how do you, every day of your life, merge your desires against those of a worldview that is completely opposite. And this they have to do constantly.
This raises two questions. First of all, can you say something about what would happen in a family situation where there was not a single predominant worldview that had the final say?
Well, you see, The reason that people do not allow other people to function freely within their own worldview is due to this innate fear that somehow one cannot be equal to another. Understand, your whole basis of how you respond to the world is based on somebody must win and somebody must lose. When you take that as the bottom understanding from which you raise all of your structures, you will not be surprised then that everywhere along the line we have this phenomenon, which is untrue, that if one person is getting what they want, then the other person must be losing something. It is impossible to convince human beings that if you give something, you are getting something. They see it the opposite. If you give freedom, you're losing freedom. If you give to somebody else the right to go out and do what they want in their life, that somehow this is taking something from you. In actual fact, if you are watching very carefully your mechanism within, when you say yes to the world, to someone, allowing them the freedom to do what they want to do totally and freely, what happens within you, if you're paying attention, is you feel expanded. Even if it's just for an instant of time, you feel expanded. You feel outgoing, you feel more in tune with the wholeness of things. And when you say no, you can't, even on a small scale, you feel, if you're paying attention, things seem to close in. It's like this accordion. Either you're pushing out in all of the vastness, or you're squashing things into a very constricted frame of reference. And this is the basis upon which people live their lives, that if you give other people freedom, somehow this is going to go against you. For example, you will see it in married couples all of the time. This fear that if one of or other of the married couples is able to participate freely and wholly and lovingly in a relationship with someone of the opposite sex, that somehow that person themselves is going to be the loser. Well, in many cases, the way the game is constructed, that is exactly what does happen. It is a very rare person who is really able to move in life in harmony and be able to find the appropriate response for all people. You know, the appropriateness of responding one way to one and the appropriateness of another. What happens is you get your own worldview comes into mind, and most people's worldview says that if you love someone, you have certain rituals you must carry out. You know, if they're anywhere at all approximating your own age, then if it's a male-female, then there are certain things that must be, rituals that must be carried out. You limit yourselves totally. So your worldview then comes in and impinges, and then everything has to focus around those particular vortexes of energy. All right. Basically, nobody trusts anybody else. Nobody trusts the other person to be able to freely move into a world and to not constrict and conflict on their own worldview. And this is why parents are so careful about constricting their children. They say it's because they're worried about their children. This is not always the case. What is more likely to be the case is they don't want to be bothered with the reverberations of having to change their own worldview of things. They don't want to look at things carefully and assess whether this is just an old worldview of their own or whether there is indeed something detrimental going on here. What are they really doing? Now, in fact, the child, most of them today, are in rebellion, and they do things that are outrageous against their parents, and some of them, quite frankly, do it consciously, out of the need to so-called get back at what their parents have been doing to them for years. The parents who are the most accommodating to the worldviews of their children, rarely have this to combat, because the child has had a sense of their own validity of their own worldview, over and over again emphasized, well, what is your opinion? Well, what would you like to do? Well, how do you see it? And then acting upon those feelings, not just allowing them to give voice to them and then cutting it down and saying, no, you cannot do it. You can simply talk about it. Do you understand? There is a way of participating and allowing. All right, so this takes a great deal of courage. And most humans, quite frankly, don't have that kind of courage. There are those that do, who have the courage to live their own lives, and by doing so, allow others to live their lives in their own freedom, too. But usually you have the paradox of the person who wants to live their own lives, but they want other people to live the lives, their lives according to the first person's dictates at the same time. And then you have this very great constriction that goes on in so many relationships. So, all I would like to say about this is to please pay attention. What is your worldview, all of you who are listening? How do you really see things? What is your feeling about your own ideas in relationship to other people's ideas? What rights do you have to make others conform to your particular view of things? And if you're finding that there's a lot of trouble in your life, if you find that other people are rebelling against your form of life, then I think you should look carefully. Because where there is the need for rebellion, there is the feeling that someone is in control other than the person themselves. And this brings about great unhappiness. Whether the person can hide it for a certain length of time or not is an unknown quality. Of course, look at the married relationships in the world today. Countless of them are based on this very thing. Why do so many widows suddenly come to life when their husbands are dead? Because all of a sudden, they have the wondrous feeling of no longer being under control. Why do husbands partly grieve and partly rejoice at the death of their wives? Because now they can do what they wish to do. They can rise up in the morning and they can say, this is my day. This is my day and I claim it as mine. You see, all these subtle ties and strings that you put on each other only keep you from living the spontaneous life. How can you live a spontaneous life when you're encumbered with strings all the way around you? So, we come full circle. We come to the question that has to be asked then. If you were a spiritual seeker, and if those around you are also spiritual seekers, and even if they are not, what then is your job? And your job is very simple. Your job is simply to look carefully at the strings and to ask those around you for their perception of the strings that you have upon them. What are they? Are you then, after perceiving them, are you willing to make the necessary changes or are you not? Now, I think you will find one thing to be a good guideline. How often do you say yes and how often do you say no? Now, many people say yes to those people that it's necessary to say yes to, you know, due to financial remuneration, in other words, to your employer or to those who you're employing or to those who are paying you funds and so on. These people, yes, you say yes to because it's mutually advantageous for you. But how about those that the fear factor comes in? How about saying yes to those people who you would normally want to say no to when they ask for something? How about that? And if you pay attention to how often in your life and to whom you say no and how often you say yes, I think you will find something very interesting. You will find those people who you are most reluctant to allow the freedom of their own worldview. Pay attention. Because it isn't any good to talk to a businessman and he will then say, oh yes, well I say yes to everybody all day long. Watch what he does when he comes home and his children or his wife approach him. Or the woman who has the job and says yes to her husband, because after all that is where her bread and butter comes from. But then who does she say no to? Watch carefully, she will say no to the children. You know, all of these things. These are famous stories of women who are very kind and generous to their husbands and then take out all their negativity on the children and then the child takes it out on the dog and the dog on the cat and so forth, all these stories. They all stand for something. It means that there are those people in your lives that you choose to say yes to and those that you absolutely refuse to say yes to or do so grudgingly. So how to change? It's very simple. One, become aware. Become aware that you are living a life that says no to certain people, and why? What is it? Is it that there you have the chance to control and therefore are going to push with all your might to make sure you control something? You want to feel in control. Human beings do, you know. They like to feel that they're controlling. They realize that the world is uncontrollable. Realize very deeply. The human being knows deeply within him or his or herself that they are not in control of their lives, that events come and go, things change constantly, things are always in flux. There are so many things that come in that change things for you that you have no way of controlling this vast movement called life. And you stand there like the policeman at the crossroads of a huge avalanche saying, no, no, don't come this way, don't come this way. And you hold out your puny hands and try to fend off the movement of life. And you cannot do it. You cannot do it. And inside, the human is very aware that the force of life and the power of circumstances far beyond their control is moving them at all times. And the flood of that is so much that they, instead of participating and allowing it then to take them and to form their life and to allow events to take their own destiny, they have to have some little area of control that they feel absolutely sure of. The price that they pay, my friend, is tremendous. The price that you pay in controlling even a limited part of your environment is a tremendous price. And the first thing that you pay is you give up the spontaneous love of those around you. No one loves the person that controls them. No one. Nobody expects the slave to love the master. But everyone expects the person in the household to love the person controlling their life. It is not possible. It is not possible. Children will not love the parents who control their lives on all fronts. Wives and husbands will not love their mates who control their lives and do not allow them spontaneousness of their own being. So the first and the most important thing you give up is true response, true relationship, true feeling of the joy of another person willingly wanting to be in your life with you, not having to be, not being duty-bound, but spontaneously wishing to be there. Now, that is the first thing that you give up. And the second thing, of course, that you give up is the wonder of allowing the spontaneous life to flow and watching with wonder the joys and the delights and the aliveness of letting life flow freely through your own life. You know, life will flow where it wishes. It will go where it wishes. But you can put up obstacles of such a nature that you lose out on the wonder of the spontaneity of things. You're going to have to face and go through certain experiences in your life, come what may. That is the way of things. But you can choose not where your life will flow, but how you will move with that flow. Will you stand there like the ant in the midst of the ocean fighting against the pebbles, or will you just allow them to take you where you will inevitably end up in any case? It's a matter of your choice. How do you choose to view things? And this goes back to your worldview. Most people's worldview is one of fear. You're alone, isolated, and thrust about by forces of a chaotic and usually malevolent nature. And against this, you have to fight. Humans do not see each other as helpful. They see each other as obstacles. Because, in fact, my friends, you are obstacles to each other. This is precisely my whole central point today. You are obstacles for each other. People do not wish others to be free. They are afraid that in giving others their freedom, that somehow that person is going to turn on them and somehow take away some of their freedom. These are illusory words, because it is true that when you give freedom to others, you spontaneously participate in that freedom yourself. Otherwise, it is not possible. A man who has slaves is enslaved by those slaves, make no mistake. Their whole life then has to be centered around how to keep those slaves in control. The people who try to control others in their lives have a great job to do. I mean, you have to give great vigilance to keep control in a household or in a job situation or whatever it might be. You have to put a lot of effort into that. I mean, you have to make sure that people do what you want, when you want, and in the way that you want it. This takes your time, it takes your awareness, it takes your energy. all of that going around one central point, which is, I must keep my world in order. A tremendous amount of energy has to be expended. And you can use it that way. Make no mistake, countless centuries have passed, and most of you have done just that, making sure that everything works according to your small view. Now, when it doesn't work according to your small view, instead of taking this as a clue that maybe you should relax and allow things to take their own spontaneous way, what is the response? The response is to tighten up even more. Put down even more regulations. Oh my, now we have to have even more restrictions, because after all, things are getting a little bit out of hand here. We have to make sure that nobody is free to do as they please. We have to make sure that somehow they are convinced that to do as they please really means doing what I please. And realize that the very intelligent people in the world, the great manipulators, that's what they do. They somehow are able to convince, through the power of their own mind form, to convince other people that those other people's greatest good is being met by meeting they, the dictator's, great thought forms. And the last thing that they want is for that person to awaken to the fact that maybe, just maybe, that isn't true. That maybe the greatest good for the slave is not to follow the master. That the greatest good for the citizen of the city-state is not to follow the demagogue, but rather to go on their own quiet way, doing whatever they need to do. I hope I made this clear. I'm simply trying to loosen up your visions of what you are doing and awaken you to the precariousness of living together in one house with different world views. I'm not saying all of you should leave your mates and walk out. What you will do is simply walk into another person and adopt another dialogue and trying to make accommodations in another worldview. Two people, no matter who they are, unless they are extremely enlightened. And if you are in such a state, you wouldn't be listening to all this nonsense on these tapes anyway. It would be something you already knew. Two people will not be able to inhabit one residence and have freedom of view unless they make an effort at it. And that is precisely my point. You're staying asleep so that you don't have to make changes. And the greatest and the most efficacious change is to awaken and to say, neither worldview matters at all. What is absolutely essential is to transcend worldview. But until that time, until I see that mind is a limiting force, as long as I'm still working in it, I will make maximum progress toward saying yes. Maximum progress toward at all times and in all places to say yes, even if it hurts when I'm saying it. Watch what's happening to you in those areas where the other person has brought forward a very good point and it has contradicted your point. Can you willingly and wholeheartedly say, yes, I see that, I see that? Or do you say with tight lips and clenched teeth, I suppose that might be true under certain circumstances? How willing are all of you to spontaneously open your being and say, yes, I see that point of view. By goodness, I never saw it before. And good luck to you. Move into it. Be free of it. Go into it. Experience it. This is the clue. How much can you say yes? And when you begin to say yes, my friends, to those around you, a subtle change begins to take form within you. You know, this isn't just a small, unimportant exercise. This isn't just an exercise that leads nowhere. What it really is this wondrous beginning of freeing up all of your inner energies. If you can begin to say yes to those around you, then you will begin to be able to say yes to your own life's drama. You will be able to say yes to the divine that tries to touch upon you. You will begin to say yes then on a vaster and vaster scale. And soon, one day, you will wake up and you will find that you're saying yes to all of life as it moves. So it has its beginning deeply within you. Can you say yes to those closest around you? That's where to begin.
Bartholomew, would you speak on the subject of how to balance energies in terms of dealing with the strengths acquired from past lives and the weaknesses and bringing them into harmony in the present?
Well, this, of course, is a difficult question to answer because of the obvious reason that it can be answered on two levels. I do not think that it is very mysterious to answer it in one way, which is my understanding of the very prevalent attitude on the earth plane of how these things go about happening. It's based on the idea that you are a separated entity moving from one lifetime through another, taking the raw, almost animalistic beginning and moving you through various stages of experience and experimentation, and somehow at the other end of the scale you come out a being full of light and wisdom and joy and compassion and understanding. Now, if that is the view that you hold of the thing, then it certainly makes every good sense to think in terms of learning things as you go, as you would beginning in the first grade and going on through to your graduation from high school. Well, with all due respect to those of you who are teachers, I would say that almost all of what you learn as you go from first grade through high school is not only irrelevant, but has no real reality to it. It is illusory words built upon a system that is itself in doubt as to whether it is real or not, if you follow me. Therefore, I think we have to address the question of if we were to say that that is not true, that you are not a piece of raw material that has to be molded and formed and perfected through lifetimes and lifetimes. If that is not the case, then what is the case? What if it is simply a dream dreamt by an ego that longs to see itself as continuing from past through present and into future, and hoping to continue to get some degree of eternity by projecting itself into future? What if that is all that is really going on? Now, if that is all that is going on, then what happens to our idea, our view of the raw material being shaped and formed by continuing lifetimes? What happens to it, if you're looking carefully, is that it falls into great questioning. What if I tell you that you are at this time, if you have ever lived a life, and if you are living one now, and if you will live one in the future, that all of that is accessible to you in this instant in time? And you say to me, but that can't be. The future isn't lived yet. It hasn't come into form yet. And I would say to you, you're still looking at it from the ground. You're not looking at it from the heavens. You see, my friends, the very problem lies in the fact that you are within mind trying to see outside of mind. When you are in mind, it seems to you that you move from one thought to another, from one life to another, from one experience to another. This is how you perceive it. And you are walking through and moving through mind stuff, and it appears to you that you are moving through all these things, getting better, accumulating more, becoming, you know, a greater understanding, and so on and so forth. All of these things, it seems to you that you are becoming more. Well, what you're really doing, my friends, is getting more incrustations around you. Yes, I will agree to that. What you are really doing, my friends, and why it appeals to you so much to think, is because you do not like things that are not dependable. And you feel that if you can think things, then you can know better how to react in the next moment. It is a way of defending yourself against not knowing how to act in the next moment. All right, these are two conflicting ideas. I say to you that you, when you decide to use the material around you, the raw material around you, to learn so that you will know better how to act in the next moment. What you are doing is using limited knowledge to produce limited response. And I say to you, there is another way, which is to put all that aside, get out of the mind, and allow then the spontaneity of this other consciousness to be trusted to take you from what you would perceive to be moment to moment to moment, without any projection from knowledge that you have consumed and now are ready to regurgitate in the next instant. Do you understand what I'm saying? You see it as having to accumulate knowledge, not for its inherent good, but so that somehow in the next moment of a very difficult world, you will know how best to respond. It is your insurance against chaos. It is your insurance against that moment of not knowing how to respond to life. All right. Now, by the same way, you have conjured up the idea of, if you know that you had a past life, now you know you're living this life, and now it gives you great security to think that you're going to have a future life. This is something known, and therefore, if you can learn your lessons well in this life, then the whole idea is you will live a better life in the future. Your next life then will be better, right? I mean, it stands to reason. If you've accumulated great wisdom and great skills, whether mental or physical or sexual or whatever, you've accumulated all of these skills, and they're going to benefit you in the next life. You see, this is the accumulation theory, if I might put it that way. And this is the way most people think in terms of accumulating responses so that they are then insured of what they hope to be a maximum response. All right. My friends, the same rule applies when thinking in terms of lifetime to lifetime as applies in thinking in terms of moment to moment. If you choose to rely on accumulation from past, which is memory, experience, and so forth, what you've learned from other people, dead data, if you choose to use that as the springboard into the next moment or into the next lifetime, then that privilege is accorded you. But if you decide that that kind of data does not bring you the freedom that you had hoped for, if it does not contain within it the spontaneous joy and bliss that you somehow intuitively know could be a part of everybody's life, no matter what their circumstances, then we have to say that you must shift from that limited point of view to a vaster point of view, which now says to you, surrender all of that limitation, rest yourself in the infinite sky of the oneness, and live out of that, and then see if there is such a thing as one lifetime after another, after another. You see, you are making an assumption based on limited data. You are seeing from a very limited point of view, and you assume that your lives are lived linearly. And I tell you that truly they're lived vertically, which means that at all times you are moving from the divine wisdom that flows through you and has you do certain actions that seem to you to be done on a linear plane. It's very difficult to explain these things in words because we are talking about a realm of existence that you are not choosing to recall. So I'm only hoping to spark certain interest in you so that you might think in terms of changing your worldview, indeed your eternal view, because it hangs on something much more than just how you see your life. All right. If there is no such thing as living one lifetime after another, if indeed it is all an illusory dream, then let us make another premise, which is this. All of the data, all of the wealth of experience, all of the balancing of all of those lifetimes is also here in this moment in time. The question that has to be asked is it real or is it not? But I promise you this, if it is real, which I think you should give question to, then there is no need for balance. All there is for need to recognize the latent development already aware and awakened within you. For example, people say you come into a lifetime in order to develop your physical feminine nature. You come in a physical feminine body. Well, my friends, is that a quality that is really necessary in a state of awareness where there is no such thing as male or female? What is the need to perfect your feminine nature if indeed there are realms that are far higher and more accessible and more expanding where physical male and female is not even a question? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Now, what questions come to your mind? I'm sure there will be several.
Yes, first of all, I'm wondering, with respect to your earlier comments on the bubble that everybody carries around with them, is this bubble based upon illusion of time? I mean, is that what keeps this, is that what holds this bubble together with its, and everybody's worldview and thought construct?
All right, yes, good question. What really is happening is, I've told you before that you see events as happening and being connected one to the other. And I tell you that there are space, not only between events, but between thoughts. There are spaces between, just as in your alphabet is constructed, there are spaces between your letters, but people don't ever, you know, make these analogies. There are spaces between, there is no real continuity between one letter in an alphabet in a word and another. There is space in between, much space and very little writing. But people pay attention to the writing, and since they are close together in proximity, they assume that they're somehow related. And therefore, in your world, what you do is you conceive that things are caused one by the other, because they seem to come close together. And because they come close together, you think they are related to one to the other. My friends, that is not really the case, but we speak in these terms. Countless times you will have heard me speak in these terms. Why? Because I believe in it? No. Because it is meaningful to you? Yes. I have to use, and anyone has to use, the given word construct that is going to be most meaningful, that's going to harmonize most readily with the deeper awareness that we're trying to bring forward in all of you. So all I have said before are lies. Everything that I have said is a lie, because there is no such thing as this continuity of happenings. There is no such thing as any of the things that we've discussed. But I have to use some words in order to use the raw material, in order to give you the confidence that you can use them as a springboard into awareness that will very easily look back upon all of this and see clearly the illusory quality. So for those of you who feel most comfortable with the idea that you are one entity going through a series of experiences and that you're going to learn from all of these experiences, then you're going to have to do that. The problem is that you're always going to have to continue to keep on living, keep on living, keep on living, because you're going to have to keep on experiencing now a new thing. For example, you cannot, you've conjured up for yourselves a new age. Mm-hmm. Now, in this new age, do any of the old rules apply? Only new rules apply. So those of you who are conditioned to the idea that now you have another age to live, you're going to have to live an age. Do you know how long an age is? Thousands of years. You now have a whole new age to work with, a whole new set of responses. Now all of the old rules are dead and no longer useful. Now we have to have new rules of relationship between male and female, new rules of relating between parent and child, all of these things, the whole universe, the way you've constructed your world. No, now that has to be thrown out. Now we have to have a new way of seeing the earth and the buildings and relationships and nation with nation. Do you see what's happening? Now there's a whole new age. And those of you who are addicted to living ages, you'll have to go through it and go ahead. I have no quarrel with that. But be aware of how long an age is. According to your own mentalization, it is a long time. And you are going to have to go through all of those in order to now understand what the new age is all about, which means many, many more incarnations of time. I would suggest to those of you who are tired with that, who really feel that perhaps one age is going to have some things better and some things worse in it than the age that came before it, that somehow things on balance are still going to be limiting and not reflecting the truth, perhaps you would give great thought to accepting the fact that somehow, unknown to you at this time, you participate in a vast scheme of projection, and that you would like to project yourself out of that scheme of things. And that is what my job is.
Then would you say that if time is illusory and if so-called past lives and future events are part of one dream, then what your job is to help us shift the focus of our consciousness from one aspect of total experience to a vaster aspect?
That's true. You see, as long as you stay here, you're going to be bound by the camouflage. You're going to look at the camouflage. That's a word that's been used, and I think it's a very good one. I've borrowed it, and I think it's excellent. You have been convinced that the camouflage is real. You've taken it for reality, and you act as if it were real. And as long as you stay here, as long as you do not have any other point of view to conflict with it, to challenge it, you will continue thinking that. And all I'm trying to do is to rally your forces so that you can have one moment of view of something other than that, that shows you the contrast, if I will, between the two, and then let you choose. If on seeing the vastness you choose the limited, then fine, I have no quarrel, I will have done my job. My job is to simply provide you with enough options of ways to springboard yourself out of that into another realm of understanding. If after observing the two you prefer this one, fine. And make no mistake, some people choose it. Some people choose it. And that's fine.
Is it then that at some point way back in the, you know, in the shadows of the distant past, which is all a dream, but way back somewhere in the shadows, we were experimenting with experiencing different levels of consciousness and then forgot that it was an experiment and started taking some things as real which were not real?
Yes.
Which were just something, which were perhaps just a plaything.
Yes, there's no question about that. You just began. You see, when you created the separatedness, you did a good job of it. Why not? You're God in action. You did a very good job of it. And so, when you became successful, the very fact that you were successful is the thing that sounded the death knell for you getting out of it at any early age. Because the very fact that you did such a good job convinced you, more and more seduced you into its own power and its own thing. Understand this, what you create has power. It may not live forever, but it has certain power. And it can hold you in its bondage for a certain length of time. Certain things last longer than others. This is why I say, those of you who are all excited about a new age, beware. Because a new age, if you become very addicted to being a new age person, you will have to live out a new age lifespan, and that is a long time. I have no quarrel with that. I'm simply bringing this to your awareness. Is this really what you want? There are many people awash on the earth plane at this time who are absolutely fascinated by the idea of a new age. They long to experience all of the variances and the new nuances and the new relationships and the new understandings that come with a new age. And that's fine. But they're not going to become free in the new age any more than they did in the old age. Because you see, it isn't an age that brings you freedom. It is the perception of the sleep state that you are in. It is the dream of the new age that you are moving into. And you can be asleep for another 2,000 years. So those of you who are very excited about the new age, please be careful. Be very sure that you are not seducing yourself into the joys of a fallacious new age. Because in truth, there will be, in that new experience, the same limitations, seen a little differently. Perhaps there'll be a little more love. Perhaps there'll be a little more understanding. Perhaps. But compared to what is possible outside of that limited realm, you are still exchanging coal for diamonds. You are still taking the coal of the limitation and turning your back on the diamonds. It's still all the same. Has a different wrapping, has a different look about it. Maybe it's a little thinner, maybe it has a little more shine to it. All that is possible. But still, you're responding as limited beings in a limited dream.
Then would you say that it's not the purpose of the higher powers to initiate a new age in the hope of creating a more exciting illusion on the earth, but that this is perhaps an optimal moment to wake people up. It's not that they're that what Jesus intended to do was to establish a more harmonious and more pleasant illusion for a 2,000-year period, and that's not the purpose of the higher powers this time, but that this is a good time to try to get people to change the focus of their consciousness from the dream to a higher state.
Yes, understand, and in those lapses between, what you're going through now is the maximum. You know, once the New Age is full-blown upon the earth, then people are going to go back to sleep again. You see, it's only in those moments of impending doom and chaos and great turmoil that people come up out of their insensitive sleep and begin to feel the pricks of life, you see. And when these things are happening on a worldwide scale, then the chances are that more people on the earth plane are going to take this opportunity to awaken. Yes, there's no doubt about that. And then after the so-called New Age is ushered in and peace and harmony reigns, then people will go back to sleep again. You see, it's a matter of, this is a plane of illusion, my friend. It is a plane of illusion. That is why you created it, so that you could participate in an illusion. It is not its job to reflect reality, it's its job to reflect your illusions, because you have thus willed it to do so, and that is what's happening here. The great mistake is thinking it's the only plane. There are many planes, and they teach many things, and you have just simply become so, it's almost as if the very earth itself gives off a sleeping gas that puts you all to sleep, and that those of you who try to get above it do so for certain lengths of time, and then almost seem to let go of your high reach and fall back down in it again. And this is why, over and over again, it's stated that once you come to a certain level, most people do leave the earth plane because of this innate fear. In fact, some of your books have already stated that they have come into a realization of certain people who come into body form just in order to awaken their parents, say. A child will take a body form in order to awaken their parents and perhaps fulfill a great need to be a final service to some people who have perhaps helped them in the past. All right. But they don't stay for a long period of time. They stay for a very short period. Why? Because the ethers of sleep, the gas of sleep that moves within the air, can get them again. You know, it isn't as if it's just so simple that you are so alive and so alight and you can just come in and your light will continually burn and will never go out. You know, the power of this energy field is very strong. And it's just like going into an atomic reactor. You don't go and stay for a long time without being affected by it. No matter how intense the clothing that you have put upon you. And this is what happens to so many, and they decide not to stay for long periods of time, and thus you have people, you know, infants dying at an early age and so on. I won't go into that, but this is all part of a plan, because this is a very hard planet to keep awake on. It's a very hard planet to keep awake on.
Well, if there's that much power that's been built up on the Earth, then obviously the lots of entities have devoted a lot of time to establishing the illusion here. It must have created it must have been the result of a great deal of thrust.
Millions of people, millions of separated ones giving their energy and continue to give their energy. And so be it. Well, I think we've gone on quite long enough here, but if there are any questions that arise from this, I realize that some of this is badly expressed. I realize that it is very difficult for the woman to bring these ideas through into words that will make perhaps sense to you on the first hearing. So I would ask any of you who have further questions to please send them to them, and we will do our best to answer them at another time.
Thank you, Bertrand.